Hello, dear friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast being recorded in the luxurious back room of an authentic tour bus somewhere in Charleston. We did it. Last night at 2 a.m., our driver, English, climbed into the bus and headed down the road. I still haven't met the guy. He parks really early in the morning, and by the time you wake up, he's gone. So I don't know who he is, what he is. I don't even know if he's human. Could be a robot. The bus could be driving itself for all I know. One thing I'm certain of, though, is this mattress has got to be at least 80% Jimmy Buffett jizz, and that the simulator that we're currently existing in must be breaking down, that I should enjoy the incredible honor of laying on a mattress that Jimmy Buffett has undoubtedly filled with a million gallons of DNA as he lays in the back watching satellite TV and pleasuring himself in between gigs. Am I certain that Jimmy Buffett has slept in the back of this tour bus? Yes. Why? Because Jimmy Buffett, according to a revision to the United States Constitution, has to masturbate in the back of every tour bus before it's considered roadworthy. Regardless, Charleston is amazing and humid. And I already had a conversation with somebody who told me that Charleston, South Carolina, is the holy city. And because of this, his mother had been possessed by the spirit of the baby Jesus, who told him that he was forgiven along with everybody else on earth. So that's good news for all of us. Guys, we're going to jump right into this podcast. Three this week. And the reason that we had three this week is because I was inspired by the conversation you're about to hear that I had with Al Madrigal. We're going to dive right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Have you noticed a profusion of demons cackling at you in your dreams at night? Well, it's probably because your website is attracting demons into your astral body. That's right. If you have a terrible website, then much like a pile of dog diarrhea on the side of some cracked and parched highway in middle America attracts flies, your website will attract demons that will fly into your astral body and torment you at night. Eventually, you'll go insane, claw your eyeballs out, eat them, and cut your own genitals off, leaving you a blind, sexless being convulsing and cackling in the middle of some awful lunatic's asylum far away from your friends and family. And who wants that terrible fate? It's time for you to say goodbye to those dream demons and say hello to your dreams. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan and you'll get 10% off a beautiful website. They're really cool. I've tested them out. Every single website has the ability to have a shopping cart. It sizes to any phone or tablet. You don't need to worry about any of the stuff you used to have to worry about if you wanted to try to make a website. And you don't need to worry about being hypnotized and hoodwinked by some hacker, pirate, pseudo web designer who's only going to pull you down to the darkest depths of hell like some kind of anchor strapped to the back of a saint and shoved off a boat above some deep and horror-filled oceanic trench. Nope, you can just go to squarespace.com and start building a beautiful website right now. You don't even need a credit card to sign up. You could just try it and see if you like it. But if you do like it, sign up for a year and you will get a free domain name. Squarespace.com. Offer code Duncan. Much thanks to them for sponsoring this episode. And not only for sponsoring this episode, but for putting my ass in the back of a tour bus in Charleston, because they have also sponsored the tour that I'm on, which is the Squarespace Presents You Are God comedy tour. We had a wonderful sold-out show in Asheville, North Carolina last night. We've got a show in Charleston tonight, and then we're headed to Durham on the 1st of April, then Richmond, Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia, Hamden, Boston, New York, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Cleveland, Ferndale, Toronto, Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Kansas City, St. Louis, Nashville, Vancouver, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and then to Hawaii for the spring retreat, for the Ram Dass spring retreat. Some shows have already sold out, but we've added second shows. The New York first show is sold out. We've added a second show there. The Portland show sold out, but we've added a second show. And the Toronto show sold out, but we've added a second show. And tickets are really going fast for almost every single show on this tour. So don't put off getting tickets. Get tickets in advance and come and see the You Are God Comedy Tour. And we've got some wonderful openers depending on where you're going to be. Johnny Pemberton is going to be joining us in Washington. I'm here with Stephen Ajay right now, who's a really funny comic that I met in Denver, and Mikey Campman, who is also amazingly funny, is going to be hosting the entire tour. You probably know him from Two-Act Crew. Regardless, I hope that you will take some time, go to DuncanTrussell.com and buy tickets to one of these shows if I happen to be coming through your neighborhood. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. There's an Amazon portal, which is located in the comments section of any of these episodes. So if you're thinking of getting anything on Amazon.com, and one thing that I highly recommend you looking into is a Moog synthesizer. In Asheville, we took a tour of the Moog factory. I don't even know if you can call it a factory. It's like a co-op or something, but all the workers own the business, and these guys produce the most amazing synthesizers. I actually have a Moog, a Sub 37, and I bought it just because when I was playing around with it, I just couldn't believe how beautiful the sound it was creating was. And now that I've taken a tour of Moog, now I know why, because I really didn't understand that the difference between an analog and digital synthesizer is that an analog synthesizer is creating that music right there in the moment. It's more like a guitar, whereas like a digital synthesizer, even though they're super cool, it's pre-recorded sound. So the Moog is this living thing that you dial in these weird sounds. And in the old days, people like Pink Floyd, if they had a Moog synthesizer and they found a sound they liked, they would actually put duct tape all over the dials because it didn't have any way to record the sound. So it's just a fun, amazing thing. I don't really consider myself a musician as much as somebody who loves getting stoned and making sounds come out of a device that appears to have fallen out of a spaceship and seems completely capable of channeling angels or spirits if I just spin the knobs the right way. So check that out on Amazon if you're feeling like buying something intense and insane. But they also have toilet paper, toothpaste. Look, you know how it works. Just go through the portal. They give us a small percentage of anything you buy, and it costs you nothing. We also have t-shirts and posters in the shop at DuncanTrussell.com. You could go check those out too. As I mentioned earlier, if you've noticed a sudden profusion of podcasts exploding from the DTFH, it's 100% because of the conversation you're about to listen to that I had with Al Madrigal. Al is a comedian. You've probably seen him on The Daily Show. He also is the co-founder of the All Things Comedy Podcast Network. He's been on a bunch of other shows too. Gary Unmarried, Welcome to the Captain, and NBC's About a Boy. He's got comedy specials out, and he's been on Conan, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and Craig Ferguson. This is a highly functioning, super successful comedian who also happens to be a really sweet guy, a wonderful father, and a real inspiration, not just for me, but for a lot of comedians out there. So go check his website out. It's almadrigal.com, and I'll have links to his Twitter and to his website in the comments section of this episode. Okay, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, the amazing Al Madrigal. Al, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Thank you so much for coming over.
The least amount of time I've had to travel for anything.
How cool is that? We're neighbors and we didn't even know it.
Well, it's we both had the same desire to get out of Hollywood. I was living with my family in Silver Lake when we first moved down here, and then went to Eagle Rock. We were there for 10 years, and then I found this place, and I'm going to keep moving east until I can afford to move to Hawaii.
So you want to move to Hawaii too?
Yes.
See, this is the dream. And I've heard that the ultimate life is to spend your winters in Hawaii and your summers in Seattle. You ever heard that before?
No, I have not heard about the Seattle thing. What, like on an island in Seattle? Like on those San Juan Islands or
I have
something?
No idea. I don't know. I don't know the makeup of Seattle. I've only been there a few times. Every time I go, it's beautiful. It's incredible. But apparently, you know, the winters are suicide winters, people.
Now, we're in Hawaii.
Maui is where I would move.
I'll go. I'd go Big Island.
Why?
I like it there. Spread out. And not as populated. And then we'd, if I'm going to do Hawaii, but that's really where I've gone with my family almost every single year. We go to the Big Island. And
Big Island is not Honolulu.
No, that's Oahu.
Okay, Oahu.
Yeah, Big Island is the island of Hawaii.
Big Island is the one that's got volcanic rock.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yes. Hilo is one of the
okay,
cities.
Gotcha.
Kona.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, yes. Okay, I've been there. But Maui is just, you know, and
it's all nice.
Kauai is insane, yeah, too. Like, it's all insane. And whenever you go there, you think, my God, what have I done? Why am I not living here when mm-hmm. it's the most beautiful place on earth? People are pretty cool. So, yeah, I felt the draw. And then you sound like an asshole when you're talking to people there because you're like, I think I'm going to move here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, everyone says
but
that.
But I think you get island fever there, too. I think you could spend 100% of your time in Hawaii because you get, especially on Kauai or something like that. I've heard from people that you feel a little trapped in. It might be a little too slow for you to adjust.
Well, yeah, it's like a small town in the middle of the fucking ocean. You know, you're in a small town. You can't drive away from it to go to anywhere you want to go outside of that place. You got to fly. People, one of my friends moved there and described it, it turns into the most beautiful Groundhog Day ever, where it's just this endless loop of rainbows and light and beauty, but you're still stuck in this place.
You need work. And that's why I'm a huge gardener. We were talking about this, and I could probably busy myself. Between reading what various projects around the house and gardening and like physical fitness, like you'd go and work out, you do hikes and stuff like that, you could be very busy.
Surfing.
Spearfishing? Why am I not doing that for dinner every single night?
Oh, God.
So I'd go down and I'd spearfish. I've got this sort of work down. But I need to make my whole plan, and we talked about this a little bit at the Comedy Store, my plan is to make as much money as I can before 50 and 55, those two little marks, and then just see if I can just walk away altogether.
Now, how are you? You're one of the hardest workers I know, man. You're always doing multiple jobs the time.
It's a little overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, but you part of that is probably because you have a family. How many kids do you have?
Two kids, 13 and 10.
13 and 10. So for over a decade, you have been
providing. My wife hasn't worked. She's been a full-time homekeeper since we moved down here in 2003.
And so 2003, okay, right. So how old was your kid in 2003? I should be able to do that.
We moved down to one. He was 1 year. It was his first birthday when we actually left San Francisco.
So you moved from San Francisco. How long have you been doing stand-up when you moved out here?
I had been doing stand-up 4 or 5 years.
So you'd been doing stand-up for 5 years and had a child.
Yes.
That must have been terrifying. Was that terrifying?
It was a little terrifying. Well, I was working for my parents' family business. And then
what was that business?
I was hiring and firing people for other companies. So okay. I was up in the air with George Clooney. I used to fire people.
Wow.
And then I was really stressed out, crying in my car. I needed to find something else. And so I always wanted to be a stand-up comic from, you know, young age. I grew up on a block in San Francisco with other stand-up comedians. So there's Michael Meehan and Michael Pritchard lived on my square block.
Huh.
So I would drive up to their steps. I remember walking by when I was at University of San Francisco and walking down, and there was comedians hanging out on the steps, and they were having a joke meeting, and they were going to start a sketch group. And I was like, hey, what are you guys doing? And I recognized them as all these local comics. And they were like, yeah, we're starting a sketch group. And it's cool. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
That was like the flashbulb moment where that started the...
Well, I gave a speech in high school. I was the salutatorian of my high school class, and I killed.
What is salutatorian?
That's a step below valedictorian. I was a horrible, horrible, horrible student. Just okay. The worst. Not sure how I was put through school. And math, I was trying to help my daughter with. She's a fourth grader with math, and I was bad at it.
Wow.
And I can't. I'm sure I have undiagnosed something. And so just look at it, and it does not, nothing makes sense. And really, you know, I'm fine adding up tips, and I can function. But in terms of, like, you know, really long division or any algebra, I have no idea what the fuck is going on.
Sure.
Checked out a long time ago.
It just doesn't, that part of your brain isn't functioning.
Does not work.
So you were, what was your grades in math? What were you getting?
I don't know how I was passed along. I remember going to a physics teacher at the end of high school, and I said, Dr. Parker, I'm going to fail your class. All the grades were posted. And then there was, they skipped lines. Oof. And put mine down below everybody else's. And I go, Dr. Parker, I'm going to fail your class. And he goes, Mr. Madrigal, for students like you, we don't believe in Fs. We believe in Bs. Because I was Rushmore. I created all of the sketches. I was student body treasurer. I had an article that was in the newspaper that everyone rushed to read.
What was the article?
Oh, it was Ask Al. I made up all of these fake advice. I had a fake advice column, and I wrote all the questions and the answers. And I would really subtly make digs about teachers, and, you know, it was a little controversial as well. And, you know, teachers coming up going, "What? I know this is me. What the hell are you think you're doing?" And would, you know, I went to St. Ignatius College Preparatory for Boys, and my dad went there and graduated in 1957, but there's no way I would get into that school to this day. So anyway, so I also saw Bob Sarlat, who was this old comic from San Francisco, and he had career day at our school, and on one of the doors it just said comedy. And I would always go to his career day, and he would play his old Lettermans.
Wow.
So I was watching this guy play VHS tapes of Letterman's. Anyway, so I always wanted to be a comic.
What a cool school. That's an amazing school that they would even allow a comedian in as an actual career that kids could pursue.
Yeah. So this priest, Father Prieto, I did an impression of him, and I did the Winter Pops. I would go on the announcements and pretend to be him, and everyone would think it was him, and then I would do, it would go off and get a little weird. And then they encouraged all that. And so he lobbied for me to be the salutatorian. I give this speech, 1,700 kids, crush.
Wow.
And I was like, what? This is, it was a roast. I roasted my entire class, and I roasted teachers, and it was a roast. I roasted everybody.
Did you study roast before that at all?
No, I had no idea what I was doing. And just wrote digs and, you know, subtle, you know, jabs at everybody. And then,
do you remember any of them?
Not a clue. I know.
Is it on tape?
What about how? I don't think so. No, this is pre anything. You know, I graduated from high school in 1989, and so no record of this at all. And so, I remember talking about somebody. Some of the kids wore the same clothes every single day, and I go, "And all of us have changed so much, except
Coleman, that's great.
Who wore, like, we've grown so much as people, except for this guy who's looked exactly the same from day one." Like when we stepped into school. So I did that, and then worked in this parents' family business, because we grew up pretty, like, lower middle class. My dad was a teamster that made about 30 grand a year.
Okay.
And then my mom cleaned houses and then worked as a secretary in this company. So this is all happening while I'm in grammar school and high school. And then eventually worked away and bought the company. So she has this amazing rags-to-riches story where she was making $6 an hour as a secretary, and then working girl bought the company.
Wow.
So now the company, the kid who had a blazer from Goodwill, now is getting to an opportunity to take over this business. So I'm the eldest son in this family business. I work there from 19 to 32. Start doing stand-up at the age of 28, because I figure if I don't do it before 30, I'm not going to do it. My window's going to close.
What was the conversation when you start running your family business, which is a archetypical thing that you hear about, but I don't think a lot of people have experienced it. That's old school. Was there like a formal conversation, like, we're passing this on to you now, you've got to start helping?
It was understood that I would do this. It would be an idiotic for me not to come in and help. I fired my first person when I was 19 years old. I was still at USF, and came in
So the family business is firing people?
We manage other people's problems. So I'm like a corporate fixer, like Michael Clayton for small businesses. And so if people were fighting or if people were stealing or if people were showing up late, we employed everyone to work there, but it was our responsibility. So I would come in and go, hey, how's it going, guys? I understand you had a little fist fight at the at lunch break today, huh?
Whoa.
I go, well, it's not going to happen again. And if it does, we're going to call the cops and we're going to fire you both.
So this is like a business has got some shitty employee that they're having problems with, but because you can't just fire somebody without getting in all kinds of weird
trouble. Yeah, you call in like the fixer.
Who will make sure that...
It's done perfectly.
So there's no litigation.
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. But there is litigation because people are fucking horrible.
So no matter what, yeah, you're going to do it.
Everyone always like horrible bosses is the thing, you know? Like, oh, this my boss, man. Boss is a dick.
Yeah.
People, just all types of people are just terrible because a lot of the people that we worked with, we gave so many opportunities to, and people just don't want to be working. That was my whole thing is I would really... was reasonable, and I would say, hey, you're showing up late every single day. You don't want to be here. Why don't you go find a job that you want to do? This is not your job, man.
Right. I could go, what would they say?
They go, yeah. People would apologize to me all the time and say, Al, I'm sorry I let you down, man. I'm just looking, really. Because I was, couldn't have been cooler about it. I was like, look, man, you're going to show up, and you're late again. I got to show up with the final check, so please don't make me do that. So don't see me again. I do not want to see you.
You're an assassin. You are like some kind of hitman.
It was horrible. People would run from me at 4:30 on a Friday. If you saw me, it was over. I carried people's plants to their cars. I was smoking cigarettes heavy at the time. So I would just smoke cigarettes in my car. And I'd play Brand Nubian, Everything is Everything. It's like a track from Menace to Society. Right before it walk in the door. If you're down, if you're down, say if you're scared, say you're scared. And this is the shit. Don't fuck around or come unprepared because you might quit or something like fucking.
Oh my God, sit in the car. So dramatic, man.
And I'd put out a cigarette and I'd walk inside and I'd fire a fucking single mom without daycare.
Did you feel powerful?
I felt horrible. So that's why I was taking stained glass class. I was volunteering for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of San Francisco and the Peninsula.
So you were trying to diffuse the...
I was balancing it all out.
So you... Now, this is a family business.
Yeah.
That you have been pushed into from familial pressure.
Yeah, yeah. Just like the people who had nothing now have everything because of this. Like, how could you not want to take it over?
And it's a kind of corporate... I guess you're like euthanizing cubicle. Corporate cubicle euthanizer. And so your parents, were they aware that you were having this kind of
struggle
with it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It was just, it sucks. My mom's, so I'm half Mexican, half Sicilian, and my mom's Judy Tarantino, and she's tough as shit. And she's like, it fucking sucks, but these people fucked up and you got to deal with it. Like, and they were brutal. They were just really tough.
Your parents.
Yeah, you're just tough in terms of not with me, but just with others. Like a big fuck you, don't fuck with us. Like you fucked up and this is what you did.
Are they Catholic?
Yes.
So did they have some kind of religious backing for their life philosophy? They didn't attach it to like this is the will of God.
No.
This is
not even close. But my the only thing that when religion entered into the picture, my dad is really sick. Like, just, I cannot believe he's alive right to this day. Sip he was given 5 months to live 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And because we staffed a lot of medical offices, my mom and dad would, they had access to all this great healthcare. You know the people who don't have access? They have all the access. And so they knew how to manipulate the system and fuck with insurances and just did... They could navigate my dad through the healthcare system better than anybody.
Wow.
So he was the first person to get experimental surgeries where they actually cut everything out. He's in medical magazines.
What kind of sickness?
He has cancer everywhere in his entire body. Like in his skeleton, in his blood, in his colon, in his skin, and just everywhere. Loaded up.
Where did it start?
started in his prostate, and I think he had a web of skin cancer as well because he was too proud to get anything looked at, and just developed over time, so they cut it all out. He spent 79 days in the hospital and got 35 surgeries in those 79 days.
Holy shit. Well, this is, you know, what you're saying is they're saying this is like the future of cancer, is that you're in the same way that AIDS used to be this death sentence, HIV used to be a death sentence, in cancer, it still is a death sentence depending on the type you have. But they're saying as these treatments progress,
sure,
it's a treatable, it's going
to
become,
you're going to be able to manage it a little bit more.
Right.
He got all of his platelets, the cancer causing cells spun out. His blood was immediately sent to Houston and sent back and put back in him. And he,
wow,
that was done twice. And
wow.
He was the only person in the world ever to get that done twice.
Wow.
And then, you know, because of some connections, we were able to sneak a blood transfusion here and there, which is a big no-no. And he came back from that. He's been eating weed a little bit. Like, he's game for trying whatever. But it, back to the religion thing, what he was telling me, when anything good would happen with stand-up or writing or anything like that, he would go, well, you know, though, this is happening because I prayed. And I go, eh. A tremendous amount of hard work has gone into this. It's kind of like, I could bet we could put aside. But I put my kids through Catholic school. My son's going to Loyola next year, which is fantastic. That's like a big Jesuit Catholic boys,
yeah,
high school. Pretty much the same thing that I went to in San Francisco. And I definitely believe in that community and being surrounded by good, positive people. But in terms of we prayed and made this happen, yeah, that's where you start to lose me a little bit.
A lot of people get annoyed by that. Yeah, a lot of people, you know, they like, I saw some hilarious cartoon where it's like a doctor with a sad look on his face as the patient is like, God saved me. And the doctor, you know, clearly, no, we saved you. But then, you know, maybe, who knows? It's a mysterious thing. Do you pray?
No. I definitely, all right, so I'm driving by an accident. I tell the kids, we're just like, there's a lot of ambulances, and we drove a car overturned. I tell the kids, okay, everybody, let's close, you know, close your eyes and think something positive and hope everybody's okay.
That's cool.
And then that's as close as I kind of pray. In terms of, I do wish people well as much as possible, and we don't go to church that much. My son's an altar boy. And possibly the worst altar boy of all.
Wait, how are you a bad altar boy?
He doesn't want to be there so much that, so he'll be on the altar and with the priest standing there, and he'll go, and everyone will be watching, and my friends are all these moms are looking at us and just start cracking up because they know that we know he's the worst. And at one point, he loves basketball. At one point, he started daydreaming about dribbling and crossover dribbling and just started like pretending he was dribbling a fake basketball.
Oh, God, that's hilarious.
And then he'll lean. You're supposed to like stand up straight with your arms, skiffle, yeah, you know, like the prayer dance.
Yeah.
And then he would just, he'll lean on stuff.
It's torture.
And he's tortured by it.
I was an altar boy in the Episcopal Church, and it was fucked. It was fucked, man. Because like, it's like bad enough to have to go to a church service. I mean, it's bad. If you're a kid, you're going to church on a Sunday. You know that outside is infinite freedom. There's all these wonderful things you could be doing. Yet here you are in this dank, incense-filled...
Sunday, it's the best day.
The best day. And you're in a doom room. And you're like surrounded by people talking in another language. And if they are talking in your language, you don't understand what they're saying because it's usually some archaic version of that.
Mm-hmm.
The monotonous chants, the weird outfit, like you're contorted into some terrible position. It's a mess, man. It really is. And I think that this is the problem with modern religion, is that it has somehow managed to transform what is theoretically supposed to be the most insanely psychedelic and beautiful thing, a connection, a ritualistic connection with the transcendent, into the most mundane, boring, orthodox shit. And if that's not Satanism, I don't know what is.
It's crazy. I really love the community of it all. I think I like people getting together and being positive.
Yes.
But other than that, like, it really never felt any connection to it. As a little kid, I was never an altar boy, but as a little kid, when I'd go to church, I sort of got why I do, you know, we'd always gone. I lived a block away from St. Anne's in San Francisco. We'd walk there every single Sunday. So I'd go by myself because they just told me to go.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I would just sit there, and it was just took time. It was just an hour lost for me.
That's it.
But then after a while, with my kids, I'm like, okay, I'm trying to explain this. Again, it's like telling my daughter to study math because I was always horrible at it. And it's like, I was never good at this. But I can't get mad at her when she has a hard time with it. And same thing with church. It's like they hate it. And all I do is say, look, we don't go very often. When we do, when we have to, just sit here and think positive thoughts, and then we're going to walk away.
That's the story of religion these days. You know, the theoretically, early Christianity and Judaism used to have cannabis as a part of it. So
really?
When you hear about anointed his head with oil, mm-hmm. and when you hear about like incense burning, when you hear about the burning bush, for example, which was an acacia bush, the acacia bush is just filled with DMT, which is one of the most psychedelic.
Really?
Oh yeah. So basically, this is the one a theory about religion is, you know, we exist in a prohibition on psychedelics, and people these days don't want to talk about it. But it used to be if you went to church.
DMT is the god drug, right? Is that?
Yeah, that's what they call it. The spirit molecule. It's a endogenous chemical that is apparently in your pineal gland. A lot of great data out there you could look at, but it's the thing that people who do it all seem to have similar kind of experiences where they are contacted by entities or there's some, there's just insane. But you know, this was the way back in the thousands of years ago. It was a different time. You know, people didn't have there wasn't a taboo associated with taking hallucinogens in the sure. same way that it is now, but it kind of makes sense that visions of God and contact with angels mm-hmm. isn't going to happen if you're just stone cold sober sitting in your desert hut. But if you happen to have managed to obtain some kind of psychoactive chemical that's floating around that the priests are using, then suddenly this church service that right now is to me, modern church is like going to a campfire and sitting around a pile of sticks that you haven't lit and pretending that you're warming your hands. Ooh, that's like what that. Modern church is. It's like we're all pretending that we're having this experience. Whereas in the theoretically, back in the day, those urns that they're walking by with filled with incense were filled with hashish, smoke just billowing out that the priests, everyone's just stoned out of their fucking minds. And people are saying these incantations to some divine being while everyone's just tripping. That's what church used to be.
Wow.
And that's a church that a kid could really enjoy.
We'd all go back to church.
Yeah, we would.
It'd be great.
Well, you still can get stoned and go to church. Highly recommend it. Do you smoke marijuana?
I eat it.
Me too.
I can't smoke anything. I took a hit off a joint on December 6th at a Christmas party and swore that it would be the last time I ever smoked anything.
Why?
Because my throat was sore for maybe 3 weeks, and I used to smoke cigarettes, and I tried just to get off of my chew a lot of toothpicks, but I was trying to smoke the vape thing, blue, those things when they came
yeah.
out. Those are horrible, and I can't. So now I'm not smoking anything, and then yeah, I'll just eat it occasionally.
Me too. Yeah, and I think people put a lot of trust in those vape companies, man. It's a...
It's Dan Soder. You know comedian Dan Soder?
He's I've heard
great
of
him. Oh, yeah. He goes, I'm not touching... He's a big smoker. And then I was trying to like, just transition with these. He goes, fuck your Chinese water vapor. Whatever the fuck is in that thing. I got sinus infections twice from smoking those things.
Well, we just don't know. I mean, the problem is it's like this is an unknown thing now, but they do say there's a lot less carcinogens in it. But the problem is you're dealing with a combustion temperature, so apparently some of the stuff in those vape pens if it's not, if the temperature is just a little too high, it's producing all kinds of fucked up carcinogenic byproducts.
I got this sweet, horrible pain and sensation in my lungs a little bit, and just decided I was just, who knows what's fucking in these. I got to be done.
I read that it's actually that people, and this could be wrong, but I read that they're finding out that it seems to be suppress the immune system. It's just inhaling anything in your poor goddamn lungs. Give them a fucking break, man. Which is what, but edible marijuana is so fantastic.
It's the best. I love those little Kiva bites and the Kiva chocolates.
The best.
There's terabytes Kiva. The Kiva people are doing great things. And also, I'm the biggest lightweight ever. When I first got my pot card, I went, me and, you know that Death Squad show that they do at the Ice House?
Yes.
Well, that was initially the Ice House Chronicles or whatever that was. I found Red Brand that space. And then introduced him over there because it was me and Ari were supposed to take over that second room before we moved to New York a long time ago. And we both looked at each other, and this is like show two. And we're like, we can't do this. What are we doing? Like, fuck this. And I go, Red Band. Let's get him on it. And so helped, you know, negotiate his rent, moved him over there, and then I was sitting with Ari on, like, the very first one of those shows. I got my pot ID, and I got a piece of blueberry cake, and I found this place that was just, and I split it in half, and I go, you take half, and I'll take half, and he goes, okay. He didn't feel a thing, and I was standing on my couch, like, going, what is happening? And I go, that cake was fucking crazy, huh? And nothing.
Ari?
Zero.
Ari, yeah, because Ari has an insane tolerance because the guy's constantly consuming weed, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think one, I don't know how many people know this about you, Al, but you are the comedian where if you're thinking about buying a house.
Oh, yeah.
That people contact.
Brendan Walsh, I'm a comedy name dropper, but Brendan Walsh said that if you call Al and you want him to return your call as soon as possible, tell him you're going to buy a car.
Yes.
And I know everything about
car purchasing,
homes,
yard work. But I don't think people realize how in the comedy community, it's interesting how there are people, like in my mind, you probably aren't even aware of this, but in my mind, I have already made the decision. When it comes time for me to decide to buy a house, you're the first person
I'm going
to call.
Check it out.
Yeah,
I've done it twice. I feel like I'm in the house that I'll live in for the rest of my life. And before I move to, it'll be this one, and then I probably, hopefully, will keep this. My idea is that I want to pay it off as soon as possible and be done with any sort of payment and just pay taxes on it. So that's my next goal. In like the next 3 years, I will pay off my house completely and not owe a dime.
But I just want to say that you fly in the face of the stereotypical comedian in the sense that a lot of comedians, comedians, when you think about them as a personality type, generally you don't think these are very organized people who are good at the minutiae of life. A lot of us procrastinate, put shit off.
I do that, but I also, with kids, really fucking makes you.
It's the kids.
I feel like that. And I had this, business background where I was the operations manager prior to. I just don't want to fuck up. I left a family business where I could have taken this thing over and made a lot of money. And then I left it all to go and do stand-up.
What courage. What insane courage to do that.
I got cast in a TV show right away, so it wasn't that.
You were already moving in that direction. I mean, yes, getting cast in a TV show.
Helped
which TV
the
show?
It was called The Ortegas. It was with Cheech, played my dad. And that was my first lunch or first summer in 2003. It was me and Cheech sitting at Hugo's on Santa Monica.
But you had a kid after this.
Oh, no. Well, I had a kid when I came down to.
So that's the point. So it's not like you just got cat. It's not like you were like, you know what, Mom, I'm going to try stand-up. And then you were on the phone with Cheech and got a TV show. It's like you had a child. You were already doing comedy. and you moved to Los Angeles with a child as a comedian to try to make it in show business.
Yeah, it was scary.
So don't de-emphasize that, man. That is madness. That is madness.
But I think it's like, how much do we need? And I've always had this idea, is like, in how famous do you want to be? Like, I always just really wanted to make a living doing stand-up on my own terms, acting on my own. Like, I love acting. I'd love to do more of it. And just make a fine living. I don't need all the money, and I don't need any of the notoriety. And it's like, I'm really not very good at promoting myself or anything like that. But just want to just make a living, being creative, and pay for the kids. And
you're pulling that off. I mean, you're
But just not work as much as you have to. And I was telling you the other night when I didn't have anything going on, because I'm on a TV show that starts in July.
What's that show?
That's cool. I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, right. I'm Dying Up Here.
And I technically don't have to work until July.
That's so incredible. Now, I'm Dying Up Here is really interesting, because this is Jim Carrey is...
Jim Carrey is producing it as a book about the strike.
Steve Lubetkin, yep. The guy who committed suicide off the Hyatt. But this is sort of the story of like early Comedy Store days. And which part did you end up getting?
I'm Edgar. Edgar Martinez. I was on acid during the memorial. We find out the guy's dead, and then I just start giggling, and I took two hits of blotter acid the night before. I didn't know he was gonna fucking die, and like, so I'm just cracking up and laughing cool. during the whole thing. And then I do stand up. They had me, Santino, Andrew Santino, and Don Marrera did these stand up chunks. So I get to write and just pull. I think I was just up on stage riffing and fucking around with the audience a little bit, but then did a joke that I never do, and it was timeless, and then got to do that. Because it's supposed to be 1972, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was just up on stage fucking around, and then I'll be in it as a series regular, but it's all like the underbelly, but John Daly is in it, Andrew Santino, Eric Griffin, this guy Clark Duke, and then Melissa Leo, Alfred Molina, Robert Forrester, Kathy Moriarty, Sebastian Stan. Like, it's just...
Wow.
It's going to be a good one.
So that's cool. So now, but before we get into that...
I
want to talk about a little bit about you have a child.
Yeah, two.
And at the time are you doing... No, when you were transitioning to stand-up comedy... At what point did you quit your job and head into the great unknown as a comedian?
Well, I went to Montreal as a new face.
From San Francisco?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I would go down to L.A. and I started taking meetings. And I would go down, and my dad and mom were just yelling at me the entire time. So they would go, where are you right now? And I go, well, I'm going to audition tonight at the Improv for my own show. And then tomorrow I do this show with Janine Garofalo, and go, who the fuck is Janine Garofalo? And I go, she's a comedian. Right. She's famous. You just say, well, I don't know who the fuck she is. And then I go, well, and then tomorrow I meet with UPN, and then I have an audition for Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he goes, nothing, and zero response on the phone. And I go, it's after The Sopranos. And he goes, you're going to be on The Sopranos? And I go, no, I'm not going to be on The Sopranos. And I go, I'm just, this is good stuff. And he goes, well, I got to change the locks tomorrow, and I don't know who you think is going to fucking be there. And so they would, they were, until got on TV. So then I got cast in this pilot. It was me and Freddie Soto, who I ended up, I was already good friends with. Me, Freddie Soto, and Carlos Oscar as the last three guys. It was a nationwide search for a Latino comedian. We make the pilot, and I go back to work the very next day. So you go from, Al Madrigal is walking. We got Al Madrigal. Al is walking because I was like number one on the call sheet. And then I you can turn it off. I was number one on the call sheet, and then I went back to like firing people the next day. And then it got picked up. It got picked up. I moved the whole family down, and no one ever saw it because they made six episodes and nothing aired. So I bought a car for cash. I bought a Volkswagen Passat for cash. $22,000. I wrote a check for
$22,000. Wow.
And then and that next day we sat in the stands and they said, they've cut our order for 12. We now are just going to make these 6 episodes and today is our last day, everybody.
Oh.
So now I'm just left in LA, but I'm not going back. And got cast in another pilot and then after that. And so that's probably, I mean, we were talking about it just before we started recording, but I've probably known you just as long as I've known anybody down here because I was introduced to you and Sam Tripoli and Jason Tebow through Brian Jarvis, who introduced me to my wife.
Crazy. That's nuts, man.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what you have had an amazing run out here, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, just the Daily Show helped stand up a ton, and Daily Show helped me get cast and stuff, but I'd already been cast in acting and sitcoms and pilots. That never, it's like I've been on like 9 network pilots.
9.
And 4 have gotten picked up to series, and that people don't even know me in these shows. But About a Boy went for 2 years. I was in a show called Free Agents with Natasha.
Yeah.
And that 5 episodes, maybe?
I don't know.
Did I guess. And then I was in a show with Raquel Welch and Jeffrey Tambor called Welcome to the Captain. I was in Gary Unmarried with Jay Moore. That was a season. And then I was in, you know, all these things and Deals and stuff like that. Leading, I've written the Al Madrigal show 4 times. My pilot that never gets made.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
I wake up with the kids at 6:30 every morning, pretty much 6:37.
What's the schedule look like for you?
I mean, I was writing. I sold 3 TV shows last summer.
And you have a podcast network.
We started All Things Comedy with Bill Burr.
So you have a podcast network. You're writing shows. You're acting in
People made fun of me at the Daily Show nonstop because it was, they called me ABS.
What's that?
Always Be Scheming. And they would all crack up because I would take and make these shows. I got
your ambition. It's your ambition. I'm shriveling over here. When I hear about this, I think, my God, you are such a warrior, such a hard worker. Whereas for me, that kind of like hardcore, never ending, super production, it seems, I don't want to say terrifying, but it makes me think of church. It makes me think of like squirming around as an altar boy. I would go nuts, man.
But it's all, looking at all the stuff, it's all fun. I'm making a game.
Yeah.
Called Ding Long with my good friends. It was a card game I played in college. I'll show it to you on my phone afterwards. I'm making, it's like Chinese zodiac characters playing cards in an underground Chinese card room, and it's this Chinese climbing game that we played in college. So I'm making that. I started the Latino Comedy Festival, and so there's, because Saturday Night Live has had no Latino cast members. And Fred Armisen was amazing, and Horatio Sanz, obviously. But since then, which has been a long time, they haven't had anybody. So it's a struggle to find Latino talent. And so I bought that a long time ago and own that, LatinoComedyFestival.com. And so then found a partner just recently to start that as a TV show and a festival and sort of figure out who the next Latino comedians are, because you know at this point it's like George Lopez and Gabriel Iglesias and that's pretty much it. Like, there's nobody. Cristela, me, Felipe, and then it severely drops off. So I was trying to help do that, and it's just, why not? I figure all before I'm 50, and then the whole goal, and since the very beginning, is not having to work, wanting to work, but not having to work over the age of 50 or 55.
Now, it seems like you're somebody who loves to work. So,
but I like it. Like today, I felt like I was just working around the house, and I felt good about that.
Right.
Yeah.
But do you think you know, when I know a few super ambitious comedians who are of your tribe who work like you do, and I always think, you know, I don't know that you'll ever be able to stop. Like, I think the dream of some...
That's where I'm different. I think, like, okay, so super ambitious, but take a look at my Twitter or Instagram feed. And I think those guys are all super ambitious, like self-promoting themselves and doing that and working. And it's not that. So I don't really care about, I'd like to put out another comedy, you know, a couple more comedy specials.
Yes.
On my own. I don't care where they go. And then just travel around and do stand-up. I like the travel that goes with it. And then I'd like to travel as much as I possibly can. But I just want to see how much you can sort of get done and then stop. And then
You don't seem like, you know, for someone who's working so hard. And
I'm not working that hard. I feel like I'm not trying as hard, nearly as hard as I could be.
Really? So what would, okay. So tell me if you were at like, if all engines were firing.
I don't have an assistant. I would hire an assistant full time. That assistant would meet me at my house every single morning at 8 a.m. I've thought all this through.
8 a.m.
We'd start at 8.
8?
Well, I'd go to the gym early.
5? 6?
I think you got to go to the gym. Have you ever gone to the gym at 6 a.m. or anything like that?
It's been a long time, Al. If I ever did that, it's been a long, long time.
All the cars are very nice. And so I'd go to the gym early, and then I would meet, and we'd get to work, and I would just start cranking shit out. And then I would, you know, have somebody help me handle my schedule, and we'd write, and I'd have like this.
What would you write?
Oh, in addition to all that other shit, I have at least, I could tell you after, but 20 show ideas and treatments and just ready to go.
So you'd work on treatments?
I would write those shows. I wrote a movie with Kevin Christie. We just finished a movie, and I want to get that out there.
How many hours would you work?
I would work like 6 hours a day.
6 hours.
And that would be done, and maybe hanging out and just enjoying the rest of the day.
At 3 or so.
Yeah, done at 3.
And then your kids.
It's The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. It's the work 9 to 3.
Wow.
You know, Rogan had those books around forever.
Yeah, I've got that book, yeah.
I love that book. Jarvis introduced me to that book, and then ever since then, I've seen a bunch of people with it. But I'm a really big fan. Like, once you follow your bliss and you're doing what you really love, and like, we're making comedy. Like, I was talking to Tripoli and those guys about, I'm working on a game show with Sam Tripoli called Squabble, where it's two different types playing Family Feud. We're doing this for Comedy Central Digital to start. But it's like black nerds versus Canadians. And it's trivia. And it's real prizes. So we're looking into game show laws right now. And just making stuff. It's fun.
Now, a lot of people listening are not, including me, are not as high functioning as you are, Al. A lot of us, I'm not speaking for you guys out there. Maybe some of you out there doing this is like, I feel like I'm with the guy from Wall Street. What's his name?
Gordon Gekko.
I feel like
last night, I watched Better Call Saul with my wife and drank wine and helped my daughter an art project.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's incredible. I think we need people doing what you're doing because it raises the bar and it's exciting. But
I'm not working at stand-up as hard as I could be. I'm not doing that. I mean, I have two sets tonight.
Is this part of your mind that's telling you should have an 8 a.m. assistant and that you should be working more? How big a part of your mind is this?
I know that's what I need to do if I really wanted to accomplish all the stuff that I want to. It's like I really need to start turning it up a little bit. In the back of my mind, it's like I feel like we all have this subconscious that's telling us the right and wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
And the path has been laid out, and you're getting told the right ways to go on a regular basis, and whether or not you choose to follow the right way is, there's like a path. This was all a game. I don't know why we're here, what the fuck we're doing, but why not try to fucking get the house in Hawaii? Why not? Like, why not try to go for that? It seems like it doesn't. I'm looking at the picture of Barack Obama behind you in Hawaii.
Smoking a joint.
Yeah, it's
with a mushroom cloud rising up behind him.
Why don't you go for the Hawaii joint house why are you not like a pot farmer on the Big Island?
Well, I've never thought of it personally. That's a great idea. Can you grow pot on the Big Island? I guess you
can grow anything. It's like Hilo is really the most amazing farmer's market I've ever seen. It's like Santa Cruz over there. It's, so anyway, so that's the whole plan. It's like, why not try to, we should all be trying more. And I'm curious as to whether or not like, but should I be ambitious? Should I, why don't I just work a job? Why don't I just work in the post office?
Right. You're asking me that?
Yeah, why don't I just work in the post office? I had this conversation with Marin a long, 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 long time ago. And he goes, why don't I just bake? What if we baked? Would we get the same satisfaction?
Well, this is the question, right? This is the big question. You have this life, and you have a certain amount of daylight that you can move around on the earth without artificial light. And you have to fill that up with some kind of activity. And so whatever that activity is, it just depends. Like what you're doing, when I hear about it, it sounds really great. But I don't think I would want to, my life, I've got this podcast I do stand up, I've got a tour coming up.
You go out on the road, you're in a bus tour with people.
It's fun. Or
hopefully cool people.
But when I think about the idea of like producing a show, when I think about the idea of like going through the entire process of creating a show,
the podcast network, All Things Comedy, is a gigantic pain in my ass. I was sending Gareth Reynolds' new artwork to him this morning and approving artwork, and I had it revised because I hated the other stuff. And I couldn't believe that it took so long to get it done, and I didn't get an email, and I was aggravated that I hadn't gotten his email, and I called somebody up to say, what the fuck?
That. Yeah, see, man.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
See,
but
that's scary to me. I don't.
The end result is that All Things Comedy is a cooperative setup, so all the comics profit share. We should all have. I talked to you about this a long time ago, and you were one of the first people that I talked to about this before, when it was an idea.
Yes.
So I put on 10 podcasts. And it was Harlan Williams, Tom Segura, Your Mom's House. It was Ari, me, Bill Burr, and we just built this thing. Now we have 60, and the idea is that we're going to run it. Farrell is fantastic, and we've always had this kinship, but with All Things Comedy, I have way more of a business plan, and we want to be a big multi-channel network for professional comedians, and we want to distribute comedy, and then what I want to do is I want to get each comic to look at a check and go, holy shit.
That's cool.
Yeah, and we're going to all own this company. Like Ari in particular like has a tremendous stake in this, and Tom Segura, same thing. Dave Anthony has the dollop with Gareth Reynolds. And like, so
cool.
But anyway, I just want, we can build something, and I just, no one else was doing it, and why not do it?
Listen, man, there are people listening right now who have tricked themselves into maybe not being as productive as they could be. So talk to them. What do we do? Those of us who want to be ambitious, who want to be...
No. So it's figure out what do you want to do. It's like, so I was working in this job and I was making money. You're all working and you're making money somehow. But what do you, until I became my own sole proprietor, I am the owner of my own business, which is a production company that leases me out to do all kinds of shit. But when I saw my mom go from $6 an hour to owning this company and how successful, and sure, she was taking on a lot of people's stress and she was stressed out, but a woman who was cleaning other people's houses now has 7 houses. And she has a place in Mexico where she goes and she plays cards. And she I know right now it was a tremendous amount of stress getting there, but the end result is living in paradise. I showed you pictures like of my backyard. I feel like I can't have an unhappy day in my house.
Sure, Al. Okay, but you're on. Listen, I'm speaking for them. You're on TV, man, and you're this talented.
It doesn't matter what it is.
You're this talented comedian. Listen, I'm making minimum wage right now. Uh-huh. I can barely afford to get groceries. I've got a kid, and there's no fucking way I can start my own business.
I think it's got to be everybody, but everybody has an idea, And everybody has something that they know will truly make them happy. And if it's music or whatever it is, and I've always... See, there's a, when people have a midlife crisis, it's because they have regret and they get, you know, now they're 50, 60, and they're in this relationship and they've gone to this shit job, 9 to 5,
yeah.
And they've looked up and gone, what the fuck did I do?
Yeah.
I hate this woman. I hate this man, and I hate my job, and I need to buy a convertible, and I need to move to fucking Toledo, whatever, and get out of where I am, and just see. So how do you avoid that happening? Well, you have these instincts that you need to listen to, and it's the whole Joseph Campbell, like following your bliss, and when you do follow your bliss, or whatever that is, if it's owning a plumbing supply company, like the example that they use in The War of Art, which is something I'd encourage you to pick up immediately. Everyone should own this and do your work. All great things will happen. You just listen to that muse and you'll be fine.
But what about, you know, the everything you said's great.
So I'm doing that. But and this is what's happening.
But now, what about the 50-year-old who's listening? What about
you can still do that. It's not too late. It's not too late at all, because I think we should all be vacationing. I think we can't sweat the small stuff. I had this joke that got me in a little bit of trouble recently, fucking, because that's the other thing is I'm pretty outspoken with telling people to fuck off.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. Yeah. And I get myself in trouble on all the time. But I'm mad at that. I run hot. And so if I feel like I was wronged in any way, or if there's any, like, I was at coffee yesterday in Eagle Rock, and this woman came in and swooped in, and I had my coffee and I was meeting with this other guy, and we went for the one table, and then this woman came in and took our table and never got a drink.
Oh, Jesus.
The entire time. Just sat there and never got a drink.
Yes.
And it drove me fucking nuts.
Yes.
And I was close to saying something, but I bit my tongue and I wasn't going to say it because I'm really trying not to run as hot as I do and confront people as much. But I think it's don't sweat the small stuff and just be kind. I tell my kids, try hard and be nice. And that's it. That's all I care about.
It's so simple.
Try hard and be nice takes care of everything. So that's what I'm trying to do with myself is try hard. Be kind, and that's it. I don't give a shit about anything beyond that. But trying hard for me is suppressing. I mean, I like to drink, and I can't. I have so much, because of stand-up, I have so much edible weed in my house. I don't know what to do with it. But I could eat that every single day and not do anything. I read... I'm addicted to Jack Reacher novels.
No way.
So I love them.
You're a true dad.
Yeah. And I garden and I read it. So I'll go in my backyard. I was telling you what I was going to do. I had 3 hours and I was going to cut that hedge.
Yes.
And I think did I send you a picture of the hedge? I was going to trim. So I got on a ladder and the satisfaction I get from that. But I just want to work and retire, and then go camping and travel and do shit like that, and then spend time and walk dogs and old man out.
Oh, the old man out. But how cool to old man out after such a long stretch of hard work.
But we got to be able to afford to old man out, and we got to be able to afford the lifestyle that we know exists. Or do you? I mean, that's the other thing is I could wrap everything up here, move to North Carolina, I've thought about like outskirts of Raleigh, Charlotte, somewhere over there, and just move. I could go to Montana.
The question is this. It truly is just a decision. There's someone I email with who listens to this podcast, and he has a family, and they made the decision to move into a van and live in a van and travel around the country and do it right now. Mm-hmm. They didn't put it off. They're like, we're going to do it right now with what we have. We're not going to wait for some moment in the future because – And I don't think when I hear you talk about your work, it doesn't feel to me as though the sole reason that you're doing this is because of some future happiness.
Oh, I really enjoy what I'm
doing. You love it. But some people, the big leap that they've taken is just a decision to throw themselves into the moment, to not have some future retirement plan, to not think about that. But just to be here and live in this place with as little or as they have. And I think that that is...
It's, no, it could be homeless, though. I mean, you could also... It's like, I like showers, wine, and like this yard, and I like to be able to afford stuff. When you travel, you like to be able to stay in a nicer room or go to nice places.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, as a kid... I'd never gotten on an airplane until I was 17 years old, and we would drive in a Volkswagen Bug to Merced from San Francisco, and then we'd go to Yosemite on day trips. My dad would put a blender in a box, and we'd stay at a Motel 6 in Merced.
Wow.
It's the best time I've ever had. And so with the kids, like when we're going on vacation, we're going to go to San Diego, Laguna Beach. We will go to Hawaii. But I'm realizing also my kids are happy with a pool anywhere. And so we were doing staycations. We'd go to the, if you're ever in Pasadena, the Langham Hotel.
Love it.
And we'd do that. We'd check ourselves in there for 2 days. It was $99 a night on Priceline. And my kids had the best time ever. And so just doing stuff like that more often. But yeah, if you can afford to do it. I mean, we met some guy when we first moved down here who we were, somebody goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm a comedian." And I go, "And yourself?" And he goes, "Nothing."
That's cool.
And I said, "What?" He goes, "Dude, my wife is super rich." He goes, "My wife is a trust fund kid, and she got $150 million.
Wow.
And so he goes, "I could pretend to work," but he goes, "I'm a lawyer. I hate it. I play golf every day. And I hang out with my kids."
Well, you know, man, I got to tell you, I prefer your version, man. I think that it's cool what you're saying, because what I'm getting out of this is you can always try harder. You can always do better. You can always put a little bit more energy in the direction. And I guess the real question is, why wouldn't you do? I think the great Zen koan that you've given me today is, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
Let's just go for it and see what happens. There's so much stuff in terms of being able to travel and actually achieve something. Like, if I can build these two companies and this gaming company into something that's significant and leave my mark, and also with the Latino Comedy Festival, I really feel like it's going to do a great job. I mean, do a great thing, because this community is so underserved, and these guys don't know what they're fucking doing.
Maybe I'm going to try to get two podcasts out this week. Al, thank you so much for coming on the show. I used to do this, and I don't do it as much now, but I think I really want to do it, because this is an inspiring conversation. If you could give any advice, general life-transforming advice, to the folks listening right now, and it's important because you're an example of what happens if you work hard, what would that advice be?
So I'm going to tell you what I tell my kids, to try hard and be nice, but then do what you want to be doing. Start, figure out what your business is and start it as soon as you possibly can, because you'll see how things unfold and it'll change your life. I walked away from something, and when I started doing comedy, which is always what I wanted to do, everything just opened up. And I can't believe I'm in the situations that I'm in and the people I'm I'm hanging out with comedians that I looked up to so much. It's incredible. So, follow your bliss, whatever that is, and everything will fall into place.
You heard it here, friends. Follow your bliss and follow Al Madrigal on Twitter. How can people get in touch with you?
It's at Al Madrigal. You know, go to All Things Comedy. We're trying to build that up. And there's a lot of great shows that you might like, and a lot of we're all friends. And so, check that out. But, I'm dying up here in Showtime. That's going to be a great show. I showed you pictures of what I look like, right?
No, can't.
I'll wait to see you.
Yeah, we'll use that as the picture for the podcast.
Okay.
Okay, cool, Al. Thank you very much, man. It's been a real pleasure.
Later.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Al Madrigal. If you want to find out more about Al, you can check him out over at almadrigal.com. And thank you, Squarespace, for sponsoring this episode. Use offer code Duncan at squarespace.com, and you will get 10% off your first order. If you enjoy this podcast and want to help support it, why not go over to iTunes right now, subscribe, leave us a nice comment, give us a rating, give yourself a hot bath, snort some bath salts, dance on a grave, and shake your fist at the sun god. Hare Krishna, everybody. We will see you next week with more updates from the road.